And welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, when we last left the fans, we previewed the Monday night game against the Las Vegas Raiders, which the Lions totally dominated from beginning to end. But the Raiders were still kind of in the game the whole time. Came away with the 26-14 victory. More recently, Lions had a bye week.
Yeah, we took it easy during the bye week. Right. I had to take some downtime just because of the schedule's rough. So
and I fell asleep on the couch during our normal recording time.
Oh, I fell asleep a couple of times too, a lot earlier than normal. So I appreciated that extra week. We are back though. We will chat now for a second or two about the Raiders. Lots of other things have happened, though. Couple transactions, Lions getting healthier, lots of positive things heading into this weekend's Chargers game.
All right, so first let's lead off the transactions. The big one over the last 2 weeks is the trade for Donovan Peoples-Jones, the local kid or local man. Lions traded a sixth-round pick for him.
Yeah, not this year's draft, the following year's draft as well, which makes it even a little bit more palatable. He's on the last year of his rookie deal, so it's possible it's just an 8-game rental. At the same time, he could get an extension if he plays well. They're going to take it slow with him, but they're also, value his skill set. He's an athlete who has really way above average athleticism. He's 6'2", 205, 210, something like that. And he can stretch. He can stretch the field. He does a lot of the things that Marvin did, except he's a lot younger and could have some potential long term. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets, utilized. And then is he part of their future plans? Giving up a sixth round pick doesn't really, marry them to him. Like for some of the other trades we saw around the NFL at the deadline. But it's, it puts you in position to be able to negotiate with him and, maybe keep more of those wide receivers in the wide receiver room this offseason.
Only 8 catches for 97 yards through 7 games this season. Mm-hmm. But last year, he's coming off a season where he had 61 receptions, 839 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, Cleveland stepped away from the deep ball. And that's really where he's been the most impactful with Cleveland over the last 2 years. They just stopped throwing it. And if you don't throw the deep ball to your deep threat, he's only going to have 8 catches.
Right. Next up, they signed an undrafted free agent rookie linebacker, Trevor Nowaski, from the practice squad. To me, this was kind of, I thought he would have been on the practice squad all year.
Well, someone tried to poach him. And they didn't want to lose him. So this was we'll pay you to stick around. We'll use you on special teams and we'll continue to develop you as opposed to, letting you go off to another team. They didn't want to risk losing him. They like his future long-term. It'll be interesting to see what kind of wrinkles they put in with him because he has a pretty wide ranging skill set of experience. He can play at the mic, he can play at the jack or the Sam, I guess I should say. He played in the slot at Saginaw Valley State. And so there's some things that he can do. Athletic enough that I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they start using him as a fullback instead of Malcolm because he's a little bit bigger. And he seems to have that kind of bulldog mentality to him. So 7 off the ball linebackers seems heavy, but 4 of those guys, including Nowaski, will probably be special teamers if he's not a healthy scratch, because they are getting a lot healthier. And we'll talk about that in a second.
All right. So the corresponding move I'm figuring is the release of running back Devin Ozigbo.
Yep. Got released. And then that's because Dave Montgomery is getting healthy. And then they signed him to the practice squad. So it gives them more depth on the practice squad with Justin Jamar Jefferson already there. So you have now three running backs on the active roster, two running backs on the practice squad, and your running back room is looking a lot better than it did just a couple weeks ago.
Long snapper Scott Daly moved to injured reserve.
Hurt his knee late in the game on on Patterson's missed field goal. The 26-yarder that Patterson missed, he got his knee rolled up on in that game. It was bad enough that it required surgery. He goes to IR. He probably is done for the year. And they'll have some decisions to make at long snapper for the next 8 games plus.
So they signed long snapper Jake McQuaid to the practice squad. He's a former Lion.
He was in competition with Daly over training camp, but he was released when Daly won the job. And he's a guy who, I mean, he kicked at Ohio State. He was a two-time Pro Bowler, but he's older, and they ended up going with Daly because they thought he was the better snapper. McQuaid has plenty of experience. What's interesting here is that they put him on the practice squad, which basically means they're going to elevate him, right? They'll elevate him for the game so that they have a long snapper, and that'll take up one of their two elevation spots. So logistically, it's not that big of a deal. He'll make a game check. So when a practice squatter is on the practice squad, they get practice squad level money. But when they get elevated to a game, they get league minimum game checks. So he's still going to get paid a fair amount of money. That's why it's okay for him to go to the practice squad. He can be elevated up to 3 times. And then after that, they'll have to make a decision. So the next 3 games are in LA this week. Then at home against Chicago, at home against the Packers on Thanksgiving. Then you have an extended break where you can make a decision on, do we want to do this again, get another long snapper on the practice squad, or do we want to maybe sign him to the active roster? So coming by December, they'll have to make a decision on what to do at the position, but they can kind of move within this, you know, practice squad elevation type thing for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's a vital position. We always gloss over it, but you know, when you don't have a good one in there, disaster always ensues. All right, let's go to the injuries.
Real fast. Did you ever hear Bill Belichick's
explanation? He goes on for like 15 minutes on long snappers.
I think it's 11 or 12, but yeah. Yeah, where they asked him about how important it was, and he went into this just elaborate explanation. It was fascinating. Seen it, it's out there.
You just have to look at it like this. There is a spot on the 53-man roster for the long snapper, and that's all he does. He doesn't do anything else. You know, like he'll run down on, you know, for punt protection and all that, but that's it. All he does is long snap. It's a vital position. And that's, you know, luckily, more or less, there are 32, you know, men between the ages of 21 and 43 that can do it well enough. You know, we don't have 32 punters, we don't have 32 kickers from that age range that can do it at a high level, but somehow we got 32 that can fire the ball between their legs, you know, on field goals and punts. All right, let's go to the injured report. Running back David Montgomery, this rib injury, full practice Tuesday and Thursday. He's coming back.
Yeah, so they practiced Tuesday because they, coming off the bye, they wanted to get a heavier workout in on Tuesday, give the players a day off on Wednesday. So we have Tuesday reports here instead of Wednesday like we normally would. So yeah, full practice, he's going to be good to go. They're going to deploy Montgomery and Gibbs. They're going to try and split them even if they can. They're going to try maybe potentially two back sets at times, and he should be good to go. And it should be exciting to see how the touches get, you know, distributed.
Wide receiver Donovan Peoples-Jones, the newest Lion, rib injury, limited Tuesday, Thursday. But like you said, they're going to ease him in anyways.
Yeah, he wasn't on the injured report in Cleveland, but you know, they kind of knew about this, I guess, ahead of time, or at least they did when they did their medical examination. And, you know, because Campbell was talking about easing him in mentally and physically, you know, early on after they traded for him. So they kind of identified this and were prepared, and they're not going to rush him. But I do think I still expect him to play. I think he'll find his way onto the field.
Left guard Jonah Jackson, ankle injury, full practice Tuesday, Thursday. It looks like he'll be returning.
Yeah, a little doubt here. He is good to go. He should come back to that left guard position. And he's already talking smack into the media, talking about how he's ready to put on a show again.
Center Frank Ragnow, toe injury, full practice Tuesday, Thursday, probably first time all year. We didn't say he was out, but once again, as you mentioned about the Wednesday practice.
Both those guys should return. And that really is starting to get that offensive line, especially the starters, nice and healthy.
And speaking of the starters, right guard Hal Vitae, his back injury, limited Tuesday, did not practice Thursday, but he's no longer considered the starter at right guard.
Yep, that's Graham Glasgow now. Vitae has just can't get right, you know. It's an unfortunate thing because he's a good player. He's a good mentor. But this back injury, this is his another back injury here, and this one's lingering. And so it seems like it's just really bad news for him. They said they're just going to continue to take it slow and we'll see. So I don't expect him to start another game for them this year. That's kind of at the point where I'm at. Graham is playing some of the best football of his career right now. And so, your Decker, Jackson, Ragnow, Glasgow, Sewell combination, that's your starters. And that's what, I think they're hoping to stay healthy and just roll with those guys the rest of the way.
All right. So, offensive lineman, he's got some versatility. Dan Skipper, also rib injury, full practice Tuesday, limited on Thursday.
So that'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Because he had a full practice Tuesday, wasn't on the injury report at all, shows up limited. Those limited reports midweek are sometimes an indicator of he had to leave practice early because he was hurt, or maybe he had a lingering issue from a previous practice. It's hard to tell. We'll know more on Friday. Currently, they have 9 offensive linemen on their active roster and then another 3 on the practice squad. So, but they need to keep 8 active on game days in order to get the roster bonus. So if Vitae can't play and if Skipper can't play, then they're going to need to make a move to elevate one of the other practice squad offensive linemen. And if one of your elevations is already going to Jake McQuaid and you got to use the other one on a lineman, well, now you're out of elevations. And so it gets a little bit trickier if you do have an injury here on the offensive line for a guy that can't go.
Over to the defense, defensive lineman Levi Onwuzurike, hip injury, full practice Tuesday, did not practice Thursday.
Yeah, this one kind of came out of the blue. These injuries tend to connect, right? Where you injure your back and then you're trying to overcompensate for your back and then you end up sacrificing another spot. And so this could potentially be that. He's been a healthy scratch the last couple of games. And now with a new injury as a hip, it's not a great sign for him.
Cornerback Khalil Dorsey, knee injury, full practice Tuesday, Thursday. Looks like he's back.
Yeah, well, Dorsey
he played against the Raiders, but he's back.
Yeah, he got hurt in that game. Late in the game on a kick coverage, he got hurt and had to be taken off. But he seems to be okay from that. That bye week probably caught him enough time to, to get healthy.
All right, that's it for the injuries. Everybody knows what happened in the Raiders game. We all watched the Raiders game. It's 2 weeks later. It's really not a ton to talk about. Defense played great. Garoppolo is still injured or whatever. They have a terrible offensive line. Lions got a coach fired. That's a rarity. You know, coach and GM fired right after the game. Positives for the Lions, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs finally showed what we kind of saw in the preseason. We saw it coming in the everybody was getting excited in the preseason. He had a huge game, you know, with Montgomery being out. He had to carry the load, 26 carries, 152 yards, and touchdown, and chipped in 5 catches, 37 yards, player of the game.
Yeah, this is that game should be a warning for defenses the rest of the way, that all of a sudden, if Montgomery was one of the better backs in the NFL, and now all of a sudden you have you see what Gibbs can do. They have two starting level running backs on their roster right now, which is, I think, what the plan was, right? The plan was to upgrade the running back room and have two guys that were both capable starters. And Gibbs has kind of dismissed the idea that he is, you know, not capable of running between the tackles, or, you know, hammering and, you know, putting a shoulder down and banging out some extra yards. But it was an impressive showing, a sign of things to come, hopefully a sign of things we'll see for the next 4+ years here. I'm excited to see what they do with the pair.
5 sacks on defense, pair by Anzalone, who had several people in the crowd dressed like him for Halloween.
Yeah.
A couple of sacks for McNeil, sack for Tracy Walker, sack for Julian Aquari, you know, did 6 sacks on the night.
Yep.
Pick for Kirby Joseph, which was good to see him coming back from injury and generating turnovers again. And it was a good night all the way around. There was a lot of happiness. Although, but going back to what I was saying earlier, like, there was some apprehension, at least going into halftime. Like, they were way outplaying them, yet it was like it was only 16-7.
Right. A couple of freak turnovers. Cleet Blakeman definitely took one away from them with his fumble, his Craig Reynolds fumble, 3 seconds after the play was, you know, his forward progress was stopped, and while he was laying on the ground. And so, you know, we knew Cleet was going to come in and mess something up. So it was nice to see that he hasn't lost his touch of being terrible. And, but you know what, we saw some things that Dan Campbell mentioned, as things the team needed to improve on. Closing in the red zone and scoring touchdowns. They're right now in the bottom third of the league in red zone touchdowns. That's an area they need to improve. They were actually ahead in turnovers as a team going into that game. And then they're even, they have just as many turnovers as they do takeaways. So they want to get more of those. That's on their agenda. And they also had another slow third quarter, just like they have pretty much every third quarter of this season so far. And those were the three main things that Campbell said that he wanted to, he thought the team needed to improve. So you can improve in those three areas. All of a sudden the team becomes a little bit more, aggressive, a little bit more dominating. Like, for example, they're scoring, 26. Let me get the number here. I'm going to look it up real fast. I got it written down. Yeah. They're scoring 25 points a game, which is 9th in the NFL. They're putting up 390.6 yards per game, which is 2nd in the NFL. So they are an offense that is putting up yards, putting up points, but their red zone scoring is at around 48%, which is 24th in the league. If they can shore up some of that red zone scoring, the points are just going to go up. If you turn those 3 points into 7 points, all of a sudden you're not scoring 25 points a game. You're scoring, 29 points a game. And if you're scoring that, you know, there's not a lot of teams that are going to beat you if you're averaging 29 points a game. So that'd be a big positive step if they can make some of those corrections.
All right. Speaking of those corrections, let's hope they take them into this game against the Chargers. game's going to be at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, California, or Inglewood. Or it's not in LA proper, but you know, it's in the LA metro area. Lions favored by 2.5.
I think it's 3 now. It was 2.5 when I wrote this morning, and I think it's up to 3. Crazy. When they first made the schedules, you know, back in April or May, whenever it was that they released, Lions were only underdogs in 4 games. This was one of them. They were 2.5-point underdogs. As late as Sunday, they were still 1-point underdogs. And then by the end of Sunday, they were 1-point favorites. And then it's gone up like 0.5 each day over the last 4 days. And now I believe it's 0.3. So they are, I'm sorry, 0.3. It is their 3-point favorites. I'm going to double check this to be sure. But yeah, they're full 3. So that line has steadily been going in the line's direction. And it is, you know, 5.5 points from where they thought it would be, you know, when they first released the schedule. So not many games the Lions aren't going to be favored in. And this was potentially one of them. And it's no longer Lions field goal favorites.
Lions, this will be their 5th road game of the season. They've 3 out of the 4 road games they've played at places with a staunch home crowd, right? They've played in Kansas City. They played at Arrowhead, Kansas City. They've played at Lambeau Field. They've played at MB&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. They played at the New Sombrero in Tampa.
Yeah.
Raymond James or whatever it's called now.
There you go.
And the Lions fans, big number of Lions fans, every one of those venues. Surprising at Arrowhead, surprising at Lambeau, surprising at Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to play in a location that doesn't have any fans. You know, the Chargers don't have many fans. It's going to have a lot of Lions. Is there going to be 50,000 Lions fans out of the 70,000 there? You know, that seems a little high, but it's going to be a lot of Lions. It's going to be close to a home game.
I agree with you. I think the West Coast trip is hard for fans. But this is a very dedicated fan base that is very excited with what's happening. And, you know, they're catching the Chargers on a short week. And they've had, and this is a coaching staff that's had almost 2 full weeks to prepare. And now they're the favorites. They're getting healthier, and I think there's a good reason for the fans to be excited. And I expect a lot of them to make that trip.
Yeah, a lot of people make the trip, and there's a lot of ex-Detroiters that live in LA.
Sure,
a close friend of mine, a friend of yours. He's a Chargers season ticket holder, but you know, he grew up 3 blocks away from me here, so he'll be swapping out his Justin Herbert jersey for some Lions gear on Sunday, and you know, he'll be rooting against his season ticket held team, his second team, right, his adopted team.
Nice.
Gonna be on CBS. Gonna have Jim Nantz, Tony Romo, and Tracy Wolfson's, which is the number one crew at CBS. So, what is it now? 6 out of the 9 games the Lions have had the number one crew at their game, right? The Chiefs game was the NBC Sunday night crew.
Yeah. That Packers game was Thursday as well.
Thursday night was with Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit. The Seahawks game and the Ravens game both had Fox's number one crew of Greg Olson and Kevin Burkhardt.
Monday night was
Buck and Troy Aikman, although no Manning cast. So they've batted all the way around. They've had the number one crew for, you know, 6 out of the 9 games.
It's impressive.
That's worth noting. The Lions, we're not the Dallas Cowboys. It's usually the Cowboys where that would be true, or the Patriots or whatever.
No, but this is one of the better matchups of the week, of the weekend, right? This is a weekend where you have no Eagles, no Dolphins, no Chiefs, all on byes. And so there's only a handful of like really good games, and this is one of them. And so it's already getting a lot of attention nationally, already getting a lot of attention on NFL Network, ESPN. And I think it's deserved. 2 teams that are potentially playoff contenders. Lions look like they're in a really good spot. I mean, the narrative of the national media surrounding the Lions and their potential is, you know, for the playoffs is, it just, it has not slowed down. it continues. Like, it's not so much they're even saying, oh, the Lions are going to make the playoffs. Now it's like, oh, the Lions could have the number one seed because they should beat everyone on their schedule type of thing. And so,
yeah, but, and they're not going to do, they're not going to beat everybody.
No, no, they're not. And they have, and look, they have, they, I'd say their toughest two games are Dallas at the end of the year. And then this one. And so if you can get a win in this game, it gets a little easier. And so, you know, there's a, I know Minnesota fans are excited because they got a new shiny quarterback.
Yeah, only a game and a half back.
And their schedule is pretty unimpressive. Yeah. Yeah. They only have a couple of games. The hardest games on their schedule are going to be the ones they play against Detroit. And so there's some hope for those fans right now. And I think that's going to draw some excitement, but the Lions, the Lions are going to be favored in those games, you know, and this is one of their tougher games. But I think they match up well. I think it's a winnable game, and it's one that's worthy of a number one, you know, announcing crew covering it.
Also, note that the game starts at 4 p.m. Eastern time. We're used to our 1 p.m. starts, but since this is a game in L.A., it's going to start at 4 here in Detroit and on the East Coast.
Extra 3 hours for your leaves.
Right.
So you can rake your leaves up a little bit more.
Well, I don't know about you, Eric, but we do live at different latitudes, you know, in the area. So your leaves might be a little more gone than mine. But we're getting close to the last cleanup, but there's still enough leaves on the trees where it's like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it yet. A little bit more to go, you know.
I unfortunately have a lot of trees on my property. So you do. I have spent
on the compound.
I have spent a lot of time in the front yard making it look presentable. So I've neglected the back. So I've probably got
one back there anyways.
Well, I know, but just I gotta get neighbors. It up. but yeah, I mean, I'll take an extra 3 hours. I could definitely use it.
Right. Referee for Sunday, not Cleet Blakeman. Cleet Blakeman's doing the game that's going on right now, the Thursday night football. You know, Sean Smith, sixth year as a ref. He hasn't done a lot of Lions games.
No, he's good though. I think he's pretty good. He's a little bit above average on penalties. League average is like 12.4. He's at 13.5. So 1.1 flags above average. But he's a competent referee as opposed to the guy calling the Thursday night game right now.
The stats are ninth in the NFL, 13.5 penalties per game. So a little bit
more average. Just a little. Yep. Just a tick.
All right, DVOA stats, Lions now drop to eighth overall offensively, fifth defensively, eighth, and they're, you know, in the top 10 offensively passing and running, seventh, fifth on the defensive side of the ball, eighth against the pass, a little surprising. Run, they're dipping. They're down to 13th. Special teams, yeah, right at 12th.
It's surprising that they're dipping against the run in my mind because they've still been statistically
pretty dominant against the Raiders.
Right. And so I think it, what's happening here with that number dipping is that maybe the opponent's running games aren't as good as they originally thought, right? Like, yeah, you held the Raiders to 78 yards or whatever it was, but like you should have type of thing. You know what I mean? Like you don't get as much of a credit for holding a bad team down. But I mean, these are not numbers to complain about because there wasn't another team in the NFL that was in top 10 in every category outside of the Lions. So now they're, you know, like a couple other teams that, you know, have one spot outside of the top 10.
Chargers DVOA is 12th overall, eighth offensively, eighth throwing the ball, 20th running the ball, and on defense, DVOA of 23, with 21st against the pass, 20th against the rush. First time, I think, this season, the special teams crew rated higher than the Lions. They're at eighth.
What's interesting about the special teams is that they were 18 or maybe even 19, and then that was ahead of Monday night, and then they had a kick punt return for a touchdown on Monday night, and that apparently was enough to jump them up to 8. Mm-hmm. Like they were a fair amount below the Lions, and then that kick return, couple long field goals, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're up in the top 10.
All right, in the offseason, the Chargers added linebacker Eric Kendricks, but at the same time lost linebacker Drew Tranquil. Also, what they claim was the big addition, they fired former Lions offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi.
Yep.
Added former Lions quarterback turned former Dallas offensive coordinator Kellen Moore to the same position, expecting some different results. And, you know, they still have a good offense, but they had a pretty highly ranked offense under Lombardi. We just know better when it comes to Lombardi. We saw enough of that over the years. This is not a good offensive coordinator.
So the big thing with Kellen Moore is that he runs a West Coast, but we saw that with Lombardi too. So he runs a West Coast, which is, you know, stuff that we've seen. Pre-snap motion, play action heavily. Kellen Moore likes to lean more on three wide receiver sets, runs about three wide receiver sets about two-thirds of the time. Ends up leaning towards being more pass heavy than run heavy, and utilizes tight ends like wide receivers, utilizes running backs wide receivers as well, pass catchers, not overly complicated, and they use a zone blocking scheme, but for the most part they're trying to get the ball in Justin Herbert's hands and let him pass it out to the receivers. Now the trick here is he's allowing the Chargers to take more deep shots. Kellen Moore is. Lombardi, we all know Lombardi. He dinked and dunked, and he always did checkdowns. But Kellen Moore likes to stretch the field a little bit more. The rub is the two guys that were best at creating those deep shots were Mike Williams and Joshua Palmer. Both of those wide receivers are on injured reserve right now. And so what we saw last game was – they had to shift away from the three wide receiver sets, and they went to more two wide receiver, two tight end in order to try and just get the best players on the field, as opposed to just like throwing three wide receivers out there and taking a lower tier talent. So they did adjust, and I don't know if they have those deep shots as available as they did earlier in the season. So Kellen's going to have to adjust, and if those deep shots aren't there, it just allows the Lions to tighten things up a little bit on him, which makes passing lanes a little bit smaller, and it just becomes a little bit more of an advantage. So losing both of your starting outside receivers is a big problem for them. And then you add in the fact that they've also lost their starting center, Corey Linsley, who's an All-Pro. Losing Corey Linsley, and then your two starting outside receivers, and it kind of speaks to why those DVOA numbers are what they are. They're bad against the run because they're bad running the ball because they don't have the guy at the pivot. They've lost their All-Pro, and they Austin Eckler also had an injury, and then they weren't able to stretch the field as much, they're not able to stretch the field as much. And so you may see those passing numbers start to dip in coming weeks as well. While now that Eckler is a little bit more healthy, maybe those run numbers go up, but you're going to have to see a little bit of a shift in what they want to do as opposed to, what they're actually capable of doing based on because of injuries this year.
All right. The draft class, they've pulled one starter, and that's kind of been kind of forced into being a starter due to the injuries. In the first round, they took Quentin Johnson, wide receiver from TCU. Second round, they picked up edge defender Tui Polotu from USC. In the third round, they picked up linebacker Diane Henley from Washington State. And fourth round, they picked up wide receiver Darius Davis, also from TCU. Very TCU-heavy draft for the Chargers. Mm-hmm. Fifth round, they took offensive tackle Jordan McFadden from Clemson. In the sixth round, they picked up defensive tackle Scott Matlock from Boise State. And then in the seventh round, they picked up somebody who's well-known to Michigan football fans, quarterback Max Duggan, also from TCU, but he's on the practice squad. We won't be seeing him on Sunday.
So if they're going to have an answer at the deep threat, it's going to be Johnston that is going to help them get that right. They're leaning on him as a, he has to be a starter on the outside. He's capable of it. They don't trust him enough right now, but Johnston is their guy that they're hoping that steps up. Their edge rusher, I already got his name wrong.
Tui Pelotu.
Thank you. Tui Pelotu is part of their edge rushing trio that they have, and he actually gets a lot of run. But when we get to their edge rushers, we'll talk about why he's not starting. And but he's a very highly used contributor, so doesn't technically get the start. He's important though. Henley is probably their third off the ball linebacker right now. He's a guy maybe for the future, not necessarily now. Davis is a really fast gadget wide receiver. He's going to get more run as the season goes on. He's also their punt and kick returner, had that punt return I was talking about earlier. And then after that, Matlock and McFadden, they're backups in the trenches. And then that's about it. So the early, you know, three of their rookies are playing in key roles, and you know, there's opportunity. I think you're seeing growth from all of them, but it's a team that really hasn't needed to lean on their rookie class, you know, too much this season.
All right. So the Chargers are 4-4, second place in the AFC West. They're behind only the Chiefs, and the Lions have defeated the Chiefs already this season. They're on a 2-game win streak. So this season they lost their first two games, then they won their next two, and then they lost two, and then they won their next two. So hopefully the trend continues and they'll lose a pair now. And who cares what happens next week, as long as they lose the Lions this week.
Yeah.
Transitive property of football. They lost to the Chiefs. That's the game in common. They are coming off of a 27-6 drubbing of the Jets on Monday Night Football.
I tell you, I watched three games. And the first game I watched was the Jets, and the Jets offense is so terrible. There wasn't a whole lot to learn, like beyond just like basic scheme stuff. Cause Jets offense is just awful.
They struggle. Then
I watched, the Bears game, and the Bears offense is not very good either. So then I was like, all right, well, let's go back and let's watch the Chiefs game. And then the Chiefs offense is so good that I'm like, what is that even? So it was I ran out of time, or I was going to go back and watch the Cowboys game too. But like, it's a really, the Chargers are such a unique team in that they're kind of a snake bitten franchise. Their seasons are always up and down. Yeah. Their seasons are up and down. Their team, their performances can kind of be helter skelter at times, but they seem to always make the playoffs. They have a lot of talent on the team, but the talent isn't always living up to expectations. Some games, it looks like they're outperforming their talent. Other games, it looks like they're wildly underperforming their talent. And so it's a hard game to predict based on just their performances. Like when you look at who they've played, nothing's been consistent. It's been weak, or, you know, really couple week really bad offenses and then a really good offense. And it's just kind of up and down. You look at common opponents. They beat the Raiders 24-17. Lions beat the Raiders 26-14. So you look at that game and you're like, oh, final score, those look similar. But then, you know, Lions beat the Chiefs, and the Chiefs handed, they handled.
We cannot live by, like, I was joking about by the transitive property.
No, we can't. But I'm saying if you look at these, like, results, and you're like, man, the Chiefs just, you know, beat the tar off of them. There were a couple touchdowns. And look, that game wasn't close either. Like, Mahomes had almost 300 yards passing in the first half. Like, it was, it just, it was not a close game. The final score is 2 touchdowns. It probably should have been more. And so it kind of illustrates my point of, like, it's there. You never know what you're going to get from them. If they bring their best, I still think they're beatable. If they bring their worst, it could be a really bad game for them. Yeah. I mean, it could be a really lopsided win. I think they're ascending in a lot of ways. They're getting healthier at certain spots. They're getting some of their pass rush back, which, you know, their health is kind of helping them. At the same time, their health is hurting them in other areas where they were finding success. So it's a hard team to predict, and it'd be interesting. It's really interesting to see how this game plays out, and we'll do our best to, like, show you what their potential is when we break down the roster here. But they're 4-4 for a reason. And depending on what you look at, you might think that they're underperforming or overperforming, just depending on, you know, the different, you know, stat metrics and stuff like that, that you prefer to lean on.
All right. The offense led by Justin Herbert at quarterback. Lions had the opportunity to draft him a few years back, passed on him. You know, they had Stafford, and that's, mm-hmm. that's something we debated years ago. We don't have to rehash it. Yeah. Revisit it today, but Herbert's quarterback, excellent quarterback. A lot of people that, you know, like, he's one of the top five, and then some other people think that, like, well, he's never really won a big game. So
yeah,
he's kind of an enigma still. Young guy,
lots of talent. He's kind of like, he was Trevor Lawrence before Trevor Lawrence was around, right? Like, he jumped into Oregon as a freshman, dominated. People looked at him and they're like, man, this kid's going to be great. And he had couple really good seasons, and then his last year at Oregon, it dipped a little bit. His performance dipped a little bit, and then he slid a little bit. Still went early in the first round because the talent's there, but he's always, in my opinion, been a little bit underutilized. I don't think Lombardi put him in good situations to be successful. Kellen Moore, we'll see how it goes. The early results are mixed, I think is fair to say, but I agree with you. The talent is there. Sometimes it's just not been allowed to, you know, he hasn't been allowed to cut it loose the way that maybe he should be.
All right. Next up, the running backs, the starters, Austin Ekeler, got reserves, Joshua Kelly, Isaiah Spiller, Elijah Dotson. Ekeler has been, over the last couple of years, one of the best dual threat running backs in the NFL, yep. Not having the greatest season so far this year.
He was injured early, and I think that definitely limited his ability to be successful. They've also preferred to lean on Joshua Kelly for more in-between-the-tackle stuff, which has put Ekeler in a position where he is getting some into tackle work, but he's getting a lot more in space work. And when you get him in space, he's hard. He's a difficult guy to handle. And so it'll be interesting to see how the Lions try and account for him. If they'll put a linebacker on him, like some teams prefer to do, or if they'll try and put a guy like Brian Branch on him. The hiccup really is they prefer to use Keenan Allen out of the slot. We'll get to him in a minute. And if you're using your best wide receiver out of the slot, then you're probably going to, you're going to lean on Brian Branch there a little bit more. But I do think maybe matching Ekeler with Branch could be an option. At the same time, when we talk about the tight ends, we'll talk about why maybe it's not an option as well. So tough guy to match up with, really talented. I think you'd love to have Branch on him all the time if he could, but I don't know how realistic that is.
All right, the wide receiver group is Keenan Allen, Quentin Johnston. Those are the two receivers you'll probably see the most. But then we have Jalen, yep, Guyton, Darius Davis, Simi Fehoko.
So Guyton Yeah, we talked about Johnson and Allen. Allen's, they're going to prefer to get him out of the slot. They think they can win matchups. The Lions have a couple of times this year asked Cam Sutton to just shadow the number one. And because Cam Sutton can move outside, he can move in the slot, you can do that with him. So this is another situation where it's very possible that they could just say, hey, Cam, take Keenan Allen and follow him wherever he goes. And if they do that, you know, the Lions will be able to adjust. You'll get your best corner on their best receiver, and away you go. At the same time, they may not want to try and, you know, play man all the time either. And it'll keep them out of, you know, easy zone type situations. And that's really where they've been thriving. So you may not see shadows as much. They've only done it a couple times this year, but they did it against the Raiders and Davante Adams. And with the injuries that the Chargers have, it is something I could see happen. And maybe not all the time, but it could happen occasionally, or maybe all the time as well. That Cam Sutton Allen matchup could be something that we have to keep eyes on. Guyton is a speed guy. Darius Davis is like your gadget guy, very quick, very difficult to handle in space. I think Davis's snaps are going to go up. Guyton's snaps are going to, he's going to start getting more snaps. He was injured. He's now getting a little healthier again. But they really don't have a downfield complement. And maybe Johnson can be that. Maybe Guyton can start stretching the field a little bit more. But until they get that, I think it's going to be a lot harder sledding for Keenan Allen. The offense as a whole, I mean, look, they're putting up points, and the passing game is a real big part of why they're able to do that.
All right. So we already hit on the two big high usage guys, Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler. Mm-hmm. Everybody who's listening, that's a strong football fan, knows about both of them. The tight end group, though, is pretty good. Gerald Everett, Donald Parham Jr., who probably could say a lot of positive things about the XFL, because when the XFL came back, that's where he was stuck. And he's come back to the NFL, and he's hung on quite well. Nick Vinette and Stone Smart.
Everett, really good pass-catching tight end. Parham, really good pass-catching tight end as well. They're both better pass catchers than blockers. Everett, surprisingly, is like a really – he's been really good against breaking – he's been really good tackle breaker, which has never really been part of his game. But if you watch the Jets game, he broke like three tackles on one play in a Jets game. And he's found a way to become a threat. And so sometimes they're going to use Allen, Johnston, and Guyton, and then maybe Everett. And then there's other times where it's going to be Allen and Johnston, and you're going to see Everett and Parham, because they'll go, if you know, they do what they did last week, which was a lot of those two tight end sets. Those were the two guys they leaned on. All of them can catch the ball. That's the key takeaway here, is that regardless of if they go two tight ends or if they stick to three wide receivers, or if even, you know, if they use two running backs because of Eckler, pretty much everybody on this roster can catch the ball if they're one of the starting skill players.
All right, going down to the offensive line, left to right, Rayshon Slater, Zion Johnson, popular internet meme, Will Clapp, Jamari Salyer, and Trey Pipkins III. Slater, you know, a lot of people talked about how the Lions should have drafted Slater over Penei Sewell. You and I both think that's a terrible idea. They went the wrong way by picking Sewell. Yeah. Sewell's also like 4 years younger than Slater, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah,
but he's an excellent offensive talent. We shouldn't sell him short. He's very
good. Oh, yeah, no. No, he is very good. But I also do think that the comparison between the two is starting to go away, right? Like, Slater's given up 24 pressures in a sack on the season. Sewell's given up 5 pressures. Like, and 3 of them came when he was at left tackle those couple of years. Like, Sewell is one of the most dominant tackles in the league right now. And Slater is definitely a terrific starting tackle, but the difference between them is really starting to be noticeable. And like you said, considerably younger And the upside is, I think, much higher as well. Slater will be a problem for whoever's on that right side. The Lions will rotate who goes through, but Slater is a good tackle. He's the strong point of their offensive line. Zion Johnson's another first rounder. I don't think he's been playing as well. Him and Will Clapp will try and handle Aleem McNeil. I think that's a huge advantage for Aleem McNeil, regardless of which one draws him. Salyer, the kid out of Georgia, played tackle at Georgia. I think he would have a hard time with McNeil as well. And then Pimpkins on the right tackle spot. I think if you can get Hutch on him, it's a big advantage for the Lions there. Overall, as a unit, they're scoring 25 points a game, just like the Lions. Actually, they're scoring 25.1. So they're a tick ahead of the Lions in points scored per game. They're converting real well on third down. They convert about 41% of theirs, which is like 12th in the league. And a big thing for them is they're scoring when they get in the red zone. When they get in the red zone, they score about 70% of the time, which is second best in the NFL. And so, yes, they're struggling with their run conversions. And yes, they've lost some of their outside threats. But this is an offense that doesn't take many penalties. They convert on third down, and they score when they get in the red zone, and that's why they put up points. So if you can keep them out of the red zone, if you can get off the field on third down, that's going to hurt them, because this is a team that is, you know, more methodical in how they do things, and they don't make a lot of mistakes, and that helps. If you can force them to make mistakes and you disrupt this offense, that's a big key to finding victory in this game.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, headed up by Derek Ansley. It we usually go level by level, but it really all starts in the front seven with Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack.
Yeah, two of the best edge rushers in the game. Mack is, he's 33 now, but he's still a terrific player. Still one of the best edge rushers. I think he's like 8 sacks on the year.
Nine.
Okay. He's getting up there, but he's also still finding a lot of ways to make it work. I do think
three below two as well.
Oh yeah. They've been great on fumbles. Side note, they have 15 turnovers this season. 9 of them fumbles, lead the NFL in fumble recoveries. Bosa was injured earlier in the year, and so Bosa's still coming back. He's still getting his legs under him.
Still has 6.5 sacks.
Yeah. And like, that speaks to how good they are, right? They're two really talented edge rushers. And then Tui Pelotu is the incumbent for Mac when Mac eventually hangs things up. They do a three-headed rotation right now. It's going to be basically leaning on those three guys. They will use Chris Rumpf a little bit as well, but the three main guys are highly productive. They'll use Tulipotu inside at like the three technique, so they kind of use him like Aiden, where they can reduce him inside and try and get him matched up on a guard. So that's usually the right guard. So that's going to be Graham. That's going to have to take him on. But as we talked about, Graham is playing terrific football right now. And so when you look at where the Chargers are really good, and that's, you know, Mac, Bosa, and Tulipulotu, the Lions match up very well. Decker has only allowed 2 sacks on the season. Sewell has not allowed any. Graham has only allowed 1. And so, like, you've got 3 really good offensive linemen that are lining up against these 3 really good edge rushers, and that's going to be the battle. That is a strength-on-strength battle, and the Lions' offensive success will be won or lost there. That is the key component to making that offense work. And so there are ways that the Lions can approach this. You can just play it straight and just say, hey, I'm going to count on my offensive line to win their battles, and I'm going to throw the ball like I would normally. You can have accelerated, quick outs where you have like quick passes designed to get the football out early. You can run screens, you can do draws, or you can just straight pound it up the middle, and that'll slow the edge rushers down as well. And I do think that that's an option to just hand the ball off and hit the gaps right in the middle and don't allow the edges to even, crash down. If you just go straight forward. So lots of ways to mitigate this style of pass rush. And it could be by taking advantage of the outside corners or the inside defensive tackles. They'll have ways to approach it.
So we went a little bit out of order, but I wanted to hit on those fellas first.
Yeah.
Going back down to the interior defensive line, Nick Williams, Sebastian Joseph Day, they both started every game this season. If they want to go a little bigger, they'll line up Austin Johnson down there with them. Morgan Fox, Scott Matlock, and Otito Ogbonaya also in the mix.
They don't really play any one of those guys half the time. They play a lot of them like between 30 and 50%. Right. I'd say five of those guys probably play in that range. They rotate them through. Most of the time, there's only two of them on the field because you're a nickel. And what they do is what most teams nowadays do. And that's if you run a 3-4, which is what they run, you take off one of your down defensive linemen for your nickel. And that's what we hit. That's what we see them doing here as well. It's a very common trend in the NFL now. And so you've got five guys that rotate through two spots. Sometimes it's three, like, I don't know, maybe like 15, 20% of the time it's three, but most of the time it's just two. And I don't think any one of those guys is that good. I think they're average. There's a lot of average. Joseph Day, Fox, those guys are average. I think Nick Williams is washed. I think Johnson is a bit up, I don't think he's as good as maybe some other people do. And so this is an area you can attack. And with a healthy David Montgomery and Gibbs showing that he can do it, and you want to stay away from those edge guys, well, this is an area that you can attack on the ground. And I would try and establish the run this way. You can run your outside zones and you can still run your gaps and you can still run your power gap scheme if you want to. But when it comes to it, straight up that A gap is going to be a way to make some noise and slow everything else down around you.
All right, off the ball linebackers, Eric Kendricks and Kenneth Murray Jr. We know Kendricks well from his time in Minnesota.
32 years old, another very old, another aging linebacker on this defense. He used to be one of the best coverage linebackers in the game. That kind of fell off in Minnesota, and that's why Minnesota let him walk, and he's underperformed there as well. I think age has kind of caught up to him. He's not as good as a cover guy anymore. And so you've got basically an average linebacker who can play well in spurts, as opposed to a guy that was like a really above average linebacker on a down to down basis, like we saw in Minnesota. So, it's kind of a subdued version of Kendricks compared to what we've seen. Murray, again, is, I think, average. If you talk to Chargers fans, they don't like how he's performed and they think he's a bit of a liability. And so if you start running up the gut, it's these two guys that are going to have to try and stop it. And Kendricks has never really been known as a run stuffer. Murray is light and he's been more of a speed chase guy. And so again, if you can go right down their throat, you can get those blocking schemes blocked up against those defensive tackles, put the running backs in one-on-ones with linebackers, it's a really big advantage, I think, for the Lions. And I think it's going to be one of their keys to winning this game.
Nick Niemann's the third off the ball linebacker, Diane Henley, Tanner Muse, and Amen Ogbung Benmiga, they don't see as much playing time.
Now he and Muse are both mostly special teamers.
All right. Defensive secondary, corners, Michael Davis, Asante Samuel Jr., Jasser Taylor.
Taylor's their nickel. Yeah, so Davis is their number one. He had a really good season in 22, has not played very well this season. Taylor's their nickel. He's had some up and down games. I'd say he's average to below. Samuels, I think their best corner. He's an ascending corner that, you know, has some talent. And I think they're all kind of vulnerable. Samuel, like I said, is probably their best one. And if you can, you probably would rather throw against the other two. But, you know, but at the same time, Samuel's not necessarily a high enough regarded talent that you're avoiding him, right? He's good. He's a good player. He'd start on this roster, in my opinion, on the Lions roster. But like at the same time, he's above average, but he's not like elite or anything like that. So you can attack the corners. And the scheme that they play in the secondary, we'll talk about that when we get to through the safeties here in a second. But the scheme that they run in the secondary is not very conducive to, you know, helping them out either. And so I think that puts the corners in a lot of vulnerable spots and another area where the Lions can take advantage of.
Esong Bassey and Dean Leonard are the other corners that we'll probably see in spurts. The safeties, Derwin James Jr., excellent safety. Alohi Gilman is the other starter. Former Lion, Dean Marlowe, Jalen Hawkins, A.J. Finley.
So James is very good. And Gilman, I think, is not far behind him. I think he's underrated. Both these guys can come up in the box. But what they prefer is they prefer to run a shell coverage scheme. So Ansley cut his teeth with Vic Fangio. And so this is another Fangio shell defense where you have your 3-4 scheme up front, and then you run this like shell coverage behind it. You ask your linebackers to drop, which again, they have good. That's what Kendricks and Murray are. They're speed linebackers that can drop into space. And you have two good safeties. You can drop one of, because you're nickel a lot, you can drop one of them and then release your nickel back into that shell, or you can keep the nickel in the center of the field and drop the safeties back into the shell. But if you run into the teeth of this, the linebackers will pinch up. And if the linebackers pinch up, the space behind the linebackers and in front of the shell is going to be open. And that is Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta all day long, right? So this is a big opportunity for two of the best skill, you know, pass catchers on the Lions offense. You establish the run, you make those linebackers cheat, you're going to open up space in between the shell. If you want to stretch, you can do that with this scheme as well. You can stretch their shell out and create even more space. Last time they played a Fangio shell was against Carolina, and they used Josh Reynolds to stretch it. And Josh, I think, caught like 80 yards. He went like 6 for 80 or something like that game. And now you have Jameson. You didn't have Jameson for that game. Now you have Jameson to stretch the field even more. Now you have Donovan Peoples-Jones who's here to stretch the zone. So in my opinion, I'm trying to run it. I'm trying. And then when I start getting those linebackers to cheat, I'm going to stretch the outside corners with my outside receivers. I'm going to try and get those safeties back, get those linebackers up. And then I'm just going to attack the crap out of the middle of the field and throw to Sam Laporta and Amon-Ra St. Brown all day, dink and dunk all the way down the field. And then when you get into the red zone, now you've got to execute. The key is, and the number one key here is, Jared Goff has to be clean with the ball, right? 15 turnovers for the Chargers. That's +9. On the season, because they only turn the ball over 6 times. That's number one in the league. they get off the field on third down. So you got to get into third and manageable. You get into third and manageable by running the ball, right? So run the ball, get the middle of the field, dink and dunk, get in the red zone, score, and do that 5 times, and you win the game.
All right, special teams. The kicker, Cameron Dicker. Dicker the kicker, second year in the NFL. He's only missed 2 field goals in his career. He's a pretty good one.
Yeah, he can hit from like 55, too. He's done that twice this year, twice in the last couple of games. He can really nail that ball.
Punter's J.K. Scott, who isn't as great. He's an average punter, maybe a little below.
He's not playing bad, though, either. He's the prize on special teams.
The other prize on special teams, the return man, kick returner, punt returner, Darius Davis, you pointed out.
Yep.
His stats are really boosted by the 87-yard punt return for a touchdown.
Yeah, but he's electric, and he's a guy that they're going to have to be cautious with. Expect Jack Fox to be, you know, angling punts and trying to pin him on sidelines and them to try and not give him an opportunity to, take one back against the Lions.
The long snapper, Josh Harris, just so you know the name.
I don't know him.
But it's such an important position. But yeah, there's not many people who go digging through long snappers.
No, right.
So, all right. So that's the Chargers right there.
Yeah, it's they win because they're clean. They play pretty clean football. They don't take penalties. They have third down success on both sides of the ball. They have red zone success on both sides of the ball. They don't turn the ball over on both sides of the ball. That's why they win. Efficiency is bad on defense. Efficiency is bad in the run game. Their strength is obviously their passing attack, but their passing attack is stunted because they have two starting receivers that are on IR. And so it's a vulnerable team if they make mistakes, which again, they don't often do. So you've got to execute. If you play in a team that doesn't make mistakes, you can't make mistakes, right? And so you've got to be able to come into this game and say, you know, you can't be rusty. You can't be rusty coming out of the bye. You have to be sharp and ready. And I think that's why they padded up on Tuesday. They wanted to make sure that they were sharp. They wanted to make sure that they were hitting their execution the way they wanted to. And if you come out and you execute like you have been and like you know you're capable of, this is a winnable game. At the same time, if you don't, if you play sloppy football, this is a team that can take advantage of that. And they can, you know, they can just as easily put up the win. For me, and I think I have to pick this game because I won on point differential last week. I think this is a game that the Lions win. They match up well in a lot of key areas. They've had extra time to prepare, extra time to get focused. They're a team that knows where their errors are and have worked to try and correct them. I think they have more firepower. They have the offensive skill players to attack the defense in a way that you can make them vulnerable. And I think they can put up points on this defense. I'm expecting the Chargers to also be able to put up points. So I'm leaning towards the over on this one, right? I think the over is like 48.5 or something like that.
Well, I guess I'd lean over too.
And look, both these teams average like 25 points a game. The trick is, I think both are going to go over, and I'm going to go 31-27.
Now you got 31-27 Lions. You know, I don't feel the same way as you do. It's a very winnable game. Every one of these games down the stretch is going to be a very winnable game for the Lions. But I don't know. I don't have the best feeling about this one. You're traveling all the way out to Los Angeles, playing at 4 o'clock, even though they had a whole week off before this. And it's not like they're looking ahead to next week. This isn't really a trap game. This is a team they probably have taken very seriously over the week because they've got, you know, a lot of star players. They got a lot of star power with the Chargers. And I don't know. I just have a feeling that this one's going to end up going the Chargers' way. I'm going to give them 28-27 Chargers.
All right.
But it's not a devastating loss if they end up losing. You know, it wouldn't be a shot. You'd look back on this like, well, they were in LA and the Chargers aren't bad and all that. Wouldn't sure. be surprised if they lose.
Yeah, it's definitely a game where if the Chargers keep playing the way they're playing, and they've been getting better, they can win this game. And I just, especially if the line, like I said, especially if the Lions come out flat. If they come out flat or if they come out rusty and they put themselves in a hole, it's going to be hard to dig out of that hole. If they come out ready, they can dink and dunk their way to 30 plus points and win this game.
All right. Any more thoughts on the game?
I don't think I do. I think that was,
well, you can chew on it for a minute.
Okay.
We've got a boost in reviews up to 454 on Apple Podcasts. We had a 5-star review from Doug the Lion last week. He loves you, Eric. Does not have the best opinion of me. He's probably right. You know,
I don't understand.
He's not necessarily wrong. I'm sure he's onto something there. Over on Spotify, we've boosted up to, there's 214 rankings now, still holding the 5-star. So that's great. So we appreciate everybody writing in, rating us. You know, it's great. You know, and thanks for listening. You know, that we wouldn't do the show without any of you.
I'm used to people not liking my opinions on something. So,
well, they're just plain wrong.
Well, I tell you, I'm excited to be back talking to you again.
Yeah. It's too bad we missed last week because I was excited. You know, like it's a chance for us to get out of the old, even though the formula works, you know, the way we break down each game, it was a chance to kind of do something different last week. But, you know, what are you going to do? We got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I needed that break, though, I tell you what.
You do. You're killing yourself out there. See, yeah. It's better if the team sucked. You have too much work to do now that they're good.
Here's the thing. When they're good, I agree, the workload goes up.
Yeah, it goes up. And they're terrible. You know, like our listenership will go down. People will stop caring. You stop caring as much. Like, because you'll start getting sucked into watching all the who the Lions are going to get in the draft. Like, you know, sure. If they're losing, what are you going to do? You're like, ship sinking. We hired these guys from the Patriots. They have no idea what they're doing. You know, like, and you just look forward to what's going on in the draft. Now it's a problem. You can't do that anymore.
Well, I tell you what. Winner. I tell you, it's easier to write when they're winning. At the same time, the volume of what we have to write is bigger. And I tell you, this is the fan base is hungry for a winner. They are consuming everything that is available, which is fantastic. And it's almost all positive, which is, I think, excellent that you get that the fans get to, you know, they get to experience that right now. And as we've talked about before, it doesn't look like it's going away. This is the way that the division is shaped up, the way that the lines are built. It seems like this is going to be a fun little trip here for a while. So, you know, it's sure looking like this podcast is going to extend into the playoffs. And
yeah, well, thank goodness.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm also excited to be leading our competition at this yep. point. I have not won ever in our competition.
This is interesting. If you keep this up, say, you know, the Lions are going to have something catastrophic will have to happen for them to not have a winning season this year. Right. Like that's kind of where we're at. It's kind of where the expectation is right now. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting if you win this year and if they are, you know, an over 500 team next year, if you win again and like, I can only do well when they're bad. And then you can only do well when they're good.
Well, I'll tell you, we've had a weird string of for those who haven't been following along through the years, Joe and I, this is we've done this is our fifth or sixth year.
Sixth
Jesus.
Year, yeah, sixth year.
So we've done this five times. Joe has won twice, and we've tied three times.
Oh, I think, three right? times. Yeah,
three
you're
times.
Right, you're right. Yep.
Like even when we tried to come up with a different scoring system, it still backfired on us, and we still tied. Mm-hmm. But you are the reigning champ, and I need to win one of these seasons.
This could be the year. It's certainly like you're ahead one game or two games right now.
I'm ahead two, 5-3.
Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah. So you're in good position. Although I do get stronger as the year goes on. That's what we've noticed in previous years.
Yeah, but it's gonna be tough to overcome a 6-3 hole after this weekend's game.
Hey, you know, I hope you're right. I hope I am down because that means the Lions got to win.
That's right.
That's fine by me. I'll lose to you in our pick'ems if it means the Lions have a better record. It's no big deal. Yeah, so that's it. Oh, the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Did you care that they didn't go? I mean, they got Peoples-Jones, but you know, there was a lot of uproar that they didn't pick up a pass rusher. To me, like I know I get it in the short term. I get that they're trying to, you know, get a one seed, get a two seed, get, you know, like win the division, win a couple of playoff games. But I mean, I also think Holmes has a vision for the future as well. They're in a really good position as far as the future goes. Look at what the Bears had to do with
Sweat,
right? They had to give him 4 years, $98 million. And, you know, we have other guys that they're going to want to give 4 years, $98 million, you know, between Sewell and Hutchinson and
St. Brown.
St. Brown. We'll see how that all, you know, I'm sure he has a mini plan going for what he wants to do in the future.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we've seen what he can do with a top 100 draft pick. If he drafts a guy in the top 100, they tend to be contributors. And so I don't think he was too anxious to give up one of those top 100 picks to try and get a guy to give money to that he, you know, instead of giving money to a guy that he drafted. So I do think the plan is to keep doing what they're doing, use their picks to draft core players and pay the guys that earn it. You know, like we saw an emotional Dan Campbell talking about on Monday night, talking about, you know, how much those players that came to work and put in the time, how much those players meant to them. And some of those players got rewarded. Khalif Raymond got rewarded for right. that hard work. And they, you know, traded or picked up Josh Reynolds that season off, you know, off waivers, and they've rewarded him. And, you know, if you come in and play, you're going to get a contract. Look at Charles Harris. Look at John Kaminsky. You know, like it's a good way to do it. It's a good way to do business. And so I don't like giving up capital to have to pay someone when you've already got guys that you need to pay. And so I get not wanting to rock the boat. They're in good shape from a cap standpoint. They're in good shape from a pick standpoint, and to be able to sacrifice both of those in order to get a guy. I don't know if it was worth it to them, especially when you can keep those and maybe get multiple guys.
Man, we're going to hear it from everybody once they lose their playoff game and they can't generate a pass rush in the game. But no, well, I agree with what you're saying. They're trying to be like the good version of the Packers, the good version of the Steelers, build through the draft. You know, it's all homegrown, build it through the draft. And that maybe they'll make a big move down the road. It'll have to be the right guy, not just, you know, any guy who's just available.
Yeah, I said it from the beginning. They want to be the Baltimore Ravens, a team that is a perennial, a team that's in the playoffs for a decade and just constantly rolling guys and paying the guys that deserve it. I mean, that's, I think the Ozzie Newsome blueprint is what Brad Holmes is trying to follow here.
Right. All right. That's all we got. That's it for us. Let's hope they get a big win on Sunday over the Chargers. And until next time, let's go Lions.